Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk to our Pet Chat team, but we only have one doctor today, Dr. Kimberly Earle. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, what are we talking about today?
Well, hopefully we get lots of phone calls today, but if not, the Pet Medicines Australia Association has released a new survey this week on pet ownership in Australia. So I thought we might have a chat about that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So the Animal Medicines Australia survey on pet ownership in Australia. So this is a group that represents the animal health industries in Australia. So, you know, drug companies and pet food and things like that. And they have put together a survey. They do it every few years about pet ownership in Australia, sort of the, you know, state of the nation as such. So what they found this year is that 73% of Australian households now have a pet, and that's up from 69% when they did the survey last in 2022. So it's a few years. So that's quite a large amount of those. So that means that we've got, they estimate 31.6 million pets across the different households. And 46% of those households have dogs. So dogs are the most common pet, followed by cats. And then there's obviously, you know, our small companion animals, birds, fish, reptiles, those sorts of things. They found that 86% of pet owners who they spoke to felt that their lives were positively impacted by having a pet, and so that there was a good, you know, sort of benefit on their quality of life and things like that.
I would agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
Someone that, you know, I used to be scared of animals as a kid. I was attacked by a cat as a baby and I was, you know, scared. But over time, when we bought our house, the cat kind of came with the house. So I had to get used to it and absolutely loved it. And now we've got another cat. And definitely.
And there actually are lots of medical studies that show that there's some benefits to just having a pet and, you know, patting an animal. You know, patting an animal has been shown to lower heart rates and blood pressure and things like that. It has a really calming effect on children as well as adults. So, yeah, we know that there's lots of benefits. But, yeah, so it's interesting that 86%, I'm wondering what's happening with the other 14% who don't feel like their lives are positively impacted by having a pet. So some interesting things. So there was Australia annually spends approximately $21.3 billion on their pets. So that's across the entire pet industry. 46% of that money is spent on pet food, which I thought was really interesting. There's some really fancy, you know, pet foods out there, and lots of clients come to me and they sort of go, oh, I'm feeding this really expensive food. It's really great. And I'm like, that's really excellent, but it's probably not what your pet needs. But anyway, that's really interesting. They say 10% of that $21.3 billion is spent on vet bills. So it's actually not much, you know, considering like the percentage, 90% is going elsewhere. And I'm sure that's things like dog walkers, pet daycare, you know, boarding facilities, collars and clothing and all sorts of, you know, beds and bowls and all that sort of stuff. And the other interesting thing that I thought was that 70% of people who own dogs say that they take their dogs for a daily walk. I'm wondering if that's actually true.
You're supposed to, though, aren't you?
You're supposed to, ideally. But not every dog will tolerate a daily walk. Not every dog needs a daily walk. You got some little dogs that will run around a backyard and things like that. It's just funny when I question, you know, we talk to people in the clinic and sort of say, what kind of, you know, level of exercise does your pet do? And, oh, you know, do you get them out for a walk every day? Well, not every day, you know. So my estimation would be that maybe it's not quite that high, but it's a good thing to aim for, a daily walk. So, yeah. Anyway, it's just a really interesting thing. I think Australia is a really pet-loving country. We have a lot of pets. The one thing on the survey was that they said that 12% of pet owners in the last sort of 12 months have felt some stress about being able to afford looking after their pets as well. And there was a slight decline in the number of vet visits for, you know, pets, individual pets over the last sort of 3 years. And I think, you know, there's obviously cost of living
is
hitting everybody.
Yeah,
so, you know, lots of times people will sort of say, well, the, you know, dog or cat's been really well. I didn't bother to bring them in for an annual health checkup, which is not ideal, but I totally can understand that as well when they're well. So, yeah,
and even,
it's interesting.
And And even pet food normally is fairly expensive.
Yeah. In Australia, it's really expensive. But even it's expensive everywhere. My mother complains about the cost of the dog food that she buys for her dog as well. So, you know, good quality food is often, you know, going to be really expensive. I do think people spend a lot of money sometimes where they don't necessarily need to. And the number of, you know, people who tell me that they're cutting up T-bone steaks for their dogs, and I'm thinking, wow, that's really expensive. Like, and it's not necessary. But people love to do things that their dogs love and that their cats love. They like to spoil their pets. That's part of the joy, I think, that we get out of it. It's not always in the pet's best interest, but we do like it, I think. So, yeah.
Right. Now, I have to apologize to Sue, who just called up, and I accidentally hung up on her. Sue, can you please call back and we'll take your call. At the moment, we've got Sam from Singleton on the line. Hi, Sam. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi, guys. Sort of not meaning to have a go, but I sort of am having a go. Talking about the cost of living and people caring for their pets, and we all do what we can for them because we love the little buggers.
Yep.
Yeah, like vet bills, mate. They're so expensive, and you wonder why people are not, you know, sort of taking their little animals to be checked out and that sort of thing all the time. And the cost of living, vet bills are just, you know, as we all know.
Yeah, listen, I totally agree with you, Sam. But, you know, unfortunately, it's like things cost what they cost. We had massive, massive price, you know, cost increases through COVID, and they haven't gone back. It used to be I could buy a box of, you know, surgical gloves for $26 for a box of surgical gloves. I have paid $68 a box now. And, you know, the reality is to keep vets working for us, we've got to pay them, you know, an hourly rate that we have to, you know, to keep them. We've got to be competitive or they won't stay working for us. So it is, it's expensive, and it's like that, you know, circle of, you know, everything goes up and then everything goes up and then everything goes up, and it's really hard.
I agree with you, but saying so, just one example, I'm not being nasty or anything, but like I had to have my little girl put down last year, and my local vet wouldn't even come up and do it. And we're 5 minutes away. Mm-hmm. We've been seeing 16 years, and I rang downtown. They were happy to come up. They came up virtually straight away and cost me $450. Now, that's a bit of money. I was happy to pay that. And I was, you know, it wasn't a problem because that's what I wanted for my girl.
Yeah.
But anybody else, you know, like that's not in a position to be able to afford it, it's terrible. It's terrible.
I know. I understand. It's expensive. Unfortunately, you know, I paid a plumber the other day $350 to come out and have a look at an issue at my house. He was literally there for 5 minutes. And gave me a quote for $750 to come back. So, you know,
in regard to putting a pet to sleep.
Sure.
Are you going to tell me that the drugs to put an animal to sleep is that expensive?
No, but it's not necessarily only about that, right? It's not the cost of the drugs. It's the cost of, you know, time away from the clinic, you know, coming out to your place. It's the cost of IV catheter placement. It's the cost of, you know, potentially dealing with the, you know, her body, things like that. It's, you know, it's one of those things that there's all sorts of different factors involved.
Yeah, highly trained people and that sort of thing. And they deserve a good rate and that sort of thing. But we'll just have to agree to disagree a little bit on that one.
No worries.
Thank you for your call. Thanks, Sam. Bye. Okay, next we have Barry from New Lambton. Hi, Barry. How can we help you?
Hello, doctor. I've got a problem with my daughter's dog. It's a 4-year-old female Dachshund.
Mm-hmm.
And it attacks everything. We had a lot of skinks in the backyard, and she's just about wiped them out. She don't eat them. She just kills them.
Oh, right.
Like the taste of them.
Yeah.
They're just about wiped out. Now there's a couple of big blue tongue lizards that have moved into the backyard.
Yep.
And she's killed one of them about 2 months ago. They're nearly as long as her.
Yep.
And she gets them and shakes
them. Yeah. Yeah. So she's a hunter. She's a killer, is she?
Exactly. And she's got a long list of, she's got a magpie, two of those Indian miners.
Yep.
She's a killer. And anyway, I already killed one, and I went out this morning, and I know when she's got him bowed up because she's barking crazy.
Yep.
I ran down the back, and as soon as I get near there, she'll go for the lunge. First, it's a face-off, and they're both facing each other off. Then she grabs it around the neck, and she got it, and it threw its tail this morning.
Yeah, okay.
So I can't, and so the other time it killed the thing, I gave it a bash, and I shouldn't have, but that never worked.
Yeah.
And this time I've put the muzzle on her. I've got a little muzzle as well.
I was going to say, yeah, it might be that, you know, when she's unsupervised outside or she's got free roam, that a little basket muzzle where, you know, something that she can pant through. So something that, you know, she can still drink water and pant through if she puts her muzzle in, but that she's, you know, protected from, you know, or not she's protected, but that she's prevented from killing these animals and that they're protected. Sometimes putting up some little like fence, you know, barriers at the edge of the garden bed that she can't necessarily easily get through, making sure that they have, that the reptiles have lots of little hidey holes that they can duck into. I mean, blue tongue lizards aren't particularly fast, particularly when they get to be, you know, big sizes, right? They're pretty slow and lumbering. It is a tricky one because we do find that some little dogs and dachshunds, you know, originally were kind of bred to be little hunting dogs. And once they get a taste for it, they can, you know, they can be pretty vicious little creatures, even though, you know, they're often really sweet little pets. But I think putting a nice safe muzzle on her for periods of time through the day, obviously we don't want her to be in the muzzle all the time. But, you know, when she's outside and having free roam in the backyard, that's not a bad idea. And just doing what we can to make sure that the wildlife has lots of hidey holes and things like that. And then other things that you can do is making sure that she's getting plenty of exercise. It might be worthwhile exploring the option of forage feeding for her. So rather than allowing her to eat out of a bowl, take her food and put it always into some sort of a puzzle feeder or a Kong or those sorts of things, so that she's actually got to do some work and so that she'll be more distracted instead of just hunting for, you know, she's obviously, like you said, not eating the lizards, but she's got that hunting drive. So she probably would do really well with, you know, being made to work for her food. And that might be enough to sort of take the edge off for her to sort of go, oh, I've, you know, accomplished something today. Now I can chill out and relax. So that would be something to talk to your daughter about, see if you can get her some puzzle feeders and some Kongs and things.
Okay. I was going to get my daughter, she's home from school, to listen, but she's ran off.
Well, maybe the podcast will be working. I'm not sure if it will, but yeah, look for exercise, increasing exercise. I mean, she's a dachshund, they can often do with some more walking and things like that, and some puzzle feeding. Make her work for her food, stop feeding her out of a bowl, and then hopefully we'll be able to sort of sate that drive that she has for hunting.
Thanks very much for your call, Barry. Appreciate it. You have a good day. Thank you. Bye. Next, we've got Sue from Dowie. And Sue, sorry for hanging up on you.
Oh, that's okay. No problem.
Now, you've got a 10-year-old, almost 10-year-old border collie digging in the same spot all the time and is halfway to China.
Just about.
Right.
Every single morning. I've come out every morning right near my laundry door, and he just looks at me and he runs straight and gets back into bed because he knows that he's done wrong.
Is this a new habit that your border collie has taken up?
Not been going for years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, we definitely see some dogs that are diggers, and they have this, you know, fascination with digging. Sometimes they're digging because they want to get to some nice cool dirt and then they want to go and lie in it. Sometimes it's just that, you know, that emotional, like, they get some sort of a release out of, you know, that digging sort of behavior. It's going to be a pretty hard thing to stop if he's been doing it for a long, long time. There are tips and tricks when you've got a dog who's new to digging, or who's a young dog who's, you know, sort of digging. People talk about putting the dog poo into the hole where they've dug, and then they tend to avoid that hole.
But they can often
just start a new hole sometimes, so that's not necessarily helpful. But I think if you've got a dog who's, you know, been doing that for a long time, you might have to just, you know, relinquish that particular spot. Certainly, you know, sometimes giving them a spot like a sandbox or a dirt hole to dig, you know, where you teach them to sort of, this is the acceptable spot, can work, particularly in a younger dog. But again, a habit that's been going on for a really long time like that, he probably gets a lot of enjoyment out of the routine of, you know, digging in that particular spot. And it's possible that there's something underneath there that he's smelling or that he can hear. Maybe there's little, critters, you know, somewhere underneath there that he can hear and he's going for. I know that my dog at certain times of the year, it's like she can hear the grubs and the beetles and cicadas and stuff coming out of the grass. Because you'll look at her, I'll see her, she starts to pull tufts of grass out. And then you can see her sort of looking down and she's like listening for what's happening down there. So there could be something like that happening as well. But
Yeah. Like we're on acreage, he's got so much other places to dig a hole, but it has to be straight out of my laundry door.
Right there, yeah. So it's a hard area. I mean, you can try covering it up with, you know, concrete paver or something like that, but it might just be that he moves that, moves his hole like a step over. Yes. It's a little bit tricky, yeah. So, I mean, you can teach old dogs new tricks. So I would, if you've got a more desirable spot, you know, it might be worthwhile taking him out there and trying to encourage him to dig. But, you know, you might have to get down and start digging with your own hands to try to
exist.
Yes. It can be a bit tricky, yeah. Bit tricky.
Okay, no worries.
Good luck with this zoo.
I might have to just live with it. It's just getting bigger and bigger. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Sue. Appreciate the call. We've got Chris from Belmont on the line. Hi, Chris. How can we help you?
Hi, Kimberly. Just wanted to comment about the fellow who rang about saying that everything is very expensive.
Yeah.
From my point of view, I don't think they're very expensive at all. I think it's very cheap compared to what's actually the reason why the cost is there. He's comparing humans who are, and in Australia, subsidised by Medicare, and the PBS in regards to the medications is being subsidised by the government trying to get it in cheaply, compared to vets, where I don't think there's many medications that are going to be on the PBS to be able to get it in as a cheap rate.
That's right.
If I had to go to a private hospital and have surgery, and I'm not covered by my health insurance, it's going to cost me a lot of money.
Mm.
And it's the same as going to a vet if you're not covered by pet insurance, which I'm not, but I have to pay for my dog to be able to be fixed. So yeah. I don't think it's very that expensive at all.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it's interesting because a lot of people don't understand too that you know, the amount of equipment that as an individual vet hospital we have to stock. We can't actually have a license to practice as a veterinary hospital without an X-ray machine in our hospitals, right? So if you think about your GP, they will refer you to an external company that just does X-rays. And as a veterinary hospital, as a small business, we have to have our own X-ray suite in our hospital. That is a requirement by the New South Wales Veterinary Practitioners Board to be able to have a hospital. So when your dog comes and you know, telling me that they're sore on the leg, we're going to do a consult. We're going to admit them. We're going to anesthetize them. So you're not paying for a specialist anesthetist. We're going to X-ray them. We've put out, you know, we've got to maintain and service and license that equipment. And then we're going to be able to, hopefully, depending on the hospital, but most of us are going to be able to then offer you some sort of surgical treatment and repair for your dog. And we're doing that all sort of under one roof. You know, we're kind of a one-stop-all shop in lots of cases. And, you know, it's expensive, but it's also probably not that expensive, not if you compare it to the human world. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm. Thanks for your thanks for your support, Chris.
I've just recently retired from neonatal intensive care unit, and a 24-weeker would cost close to $250,000 to be able to get out of hospital.
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
And whether you're insured or not insured, no one pays that. The government pays that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's pretty. That's pretty astounding, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's a good.
As I said, I think the vets are very cheap. Yeah,
and a good reason to get pet insurance, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your call, Chris. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Have a good day. Next, we have Kyle from Whitebridge. Hi, Kyle. How can we help you?
Yeah, mate. I've got a greyhound.
Mm-hmm.
He's ex racer.
Yep.
I've been giving him that NexGard Spectra.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 days ago, I found a tick in him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Now, how does that work?
Yeah.
Is it supposed to kill them on contact or what?
No. Drugs like the NexGard Spectra, Bravecto, Simparica Trio, there's a whole bunch of them. Their active ingredients are in the isoxazoline class of medications. And those drugs actually do take a little bit of time. So the ticks will attach onto them. And then over the course of 48 to 72 hours, the medication being on board in your pet will kill the ticks. Now, our Australian paralysis ticks usually take 3 to 4 to maybe even 5 days, but often 3 to 4 days before they start actually injecting poison or injecting enough poison to make animals clinically unwell. Okay. And so the reason that those drugs can still work is that as the tick is attached and it's sucking your dog's blood, so they sort of suck the blood first and then they start to inject poison into them, but they will get a lethal dose of medication before they've had enough time to actually start making your dog's unwell. So when you found the tick on your dog, were you able to get it off pretty easily?
Yeah,
it just dropped off pretty well? Or you had to scrape it off?
Got one of them card things.
Popped
it out.
Popped it out pretty quickly, yeah. So what they usually tell us is that you will still occasionally find the ticks on the dog, but they should come out really quite simply. When you've got a tick that's like really robust and attached, they can be really, really hard, even for us to get off with a proper tick. You know, we have to sort of like wedge them in and twist them out and really pull. And so chances are if it was relatively easy to get it out, probably that tick was already dead or dying and hadn't had enough chance to, you know, to do anything. So it's really about prevention, making sure that the animal is on board. Because if you find a tick and then go, oh, I better give them a tick treatment now, it's going to take too long. You know, the tick will start to do its thing. So having something on board, but they are still very, very effective as long as you're not delaying. So NexGard Spectra and Simparica Trio, and a lot of those ones are monthlies. NexGard Spectra has a 32 or maybe 33 day length of time, but some of them only have 28 to 30 days. So you just need to be making sure we're doing it on time. And the other thing,
religiously good. Great. Every the first of the month.
Perfect. Yeah, that's really good. And then the other thing is to be aware of is that if your dog has gained weight, or if they're coming very close to the weight limit on the packet, go up a size. You're way better off to push them up into the next size. These drugs generally are really, really safe for dogs. And so you'd be, you know, if your dog is sitting like, you know, a half a kilo or 1 kilo on the border of where that weight limit is, I would rather see you go up a weight range. Particularly because some dogs will fluctuate, you know, through winter and things like that. So, and we do the same thing with puppies. If they're, you know, if they're still growing and we're not convinced that they're going to, or we're concerned that they're going to outgrow the dose in the course of the month, then I'll push them up a size straight away.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your call.
You're very welcome.
Thanks.
Bye. Newcastle and the Hunters at 2NURFM 103.7. This is Pet Chat. Now, we had a caller ring up and she didn't want to go on air, but said that a good way to stop a dog from digging the same hole over and over is to put a balloon in the hole and cover it over with dirt, I assume.
I guess. So I'm guessing that the idea behind that would be that when the dog then goes to dig, that the balloon pops and it creates an aversive reaction in the dog so that hopefully they don't come back.
And they're scared to go back to the hole.
Yeah, which is not ideal. It's probably not going to cause any long-term injury to the dog, but at the same time, you know, we do worry a little bit about like whether or not we're then going to create a noise aversion to things like thunder and stuff like that.
Anxiety,
so my anxiety around other things, and so I mean, it may work. It's not a bad option to try, maybe for the right dog, but I think we just need to be a little bit careful about that sort of aversive stimuli.
Fair enough. Now, if you're looking to adopt or foster a pet, you can check our website, 2NURFM.com.au. We've got a couple of lovely animals this week. We're going to start with Bonnie, a beautiful cat.
Yeah, little Bonnie is a 2.5-year-old female, presumably female spayed cat. She's black and white. They've called her a tuxedo cat. She's got a really lovely little face. She's a really friendly cat. She's friendly with children. She's friendly with other cats. They haven't tested her with dogs, but they do think that she's easygoing enough that she would be okay with dogs. She's affectionate without being clingy. She's a nice young cat, but she's confident and curious who wants to play and explore, and she is suitable for any home, from a quiet household to a busy family environment. So if you're looking for a really nice young cat who's past the kitten stage but still has lots of life left in her, Bonnie might be the one for you.
And it does look like she's wearing a tuxedo. That's
it does,
very,
yeah,
cute.
She's very cute.
Very cute. Okay, next we've got Gidget.
So Gidget is a slightly older dog. She is 6 years, they say 6 years young. She is a Staffy cross dog. She's a perfect mix of mellow and motivated, content to snooze the day away in a sunny spot, but always eager to show off her growing list of tricks. Says she's food motivated, so she's really easy to train. She's affectionate, adores snuggling up underneath the covers at bedtime, listens really well, wants to please. And she's learning lots of tricks. Sit down, paw, stay for food. She can even catch treats in the air. It says she's fully toilet trained. She's gaining confidence outside, but, you know, still working on that a little bit. She'd be best suited to a home where someone can accompany her, probably spend lots of time with her and offer some gentle encouragement. It says she is taking some over-the-counter anxiety support to help her decompress. So I'm not sure if that's rescue remedy or something like that, but it doesn't sound like it's some heavy-duty prescription medications, which is good. Says she's super affectionate, intelligent, and loyal, toilet-trained. She would be best suited to a house that she can be a solo dog or with a really calm, older canine friend. Hasn't been tested with cats or children yet. So, yeah, if you're looking for an older dog who looks, sounds like she's a little bit of a work in progress, but a pretty promising work in progress,
lovely,
then,
looking dog.
Then Staffy might Staffy, then Gidget might be the Staffy for you. Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, we're pretty much up for the day.
I think so. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it has been an interesting day. A bit of debate about vet bills and things like that, the cost of living, pet survey. Yeah. It's been very good.
Thanks.
Yes. Well, we'll hopefully catch you in a couple of weeks.
I'm actually here next week
Next week. Yep. Wonderful. All right. Well, we'll see you then, Dr. Kimberly.
Sounds good.
Chat to a new RFM.